It's 9 o'clock. Good morning. Normally, just the two of us on a morning. But today we have a special guest in Studio B with me. Erin Anderson Whiting of the Parallel 45 Theater Group is here. Hi, Erin.
Hi, Kate.
We're so excited to have you here because you have the big opening of Hair coming up this weekend.
We
with
do.
Your new theater, everything.
Everything new. We're so excited. This Thursday, July 11th, we're opening our new venue at Civic Center Park, and we're opening it with our production of Hair,
which is so exciting. And again, you know, we don't do a ton of show tunes on Classical IPR, so we thought we'd hear some today and also kind of place them in context, because Hair is a very specific show set in, I mean, it is a really specific time period and everything that led up to it. Let's kind of talk about how Hair was born a little bit.
Yeah, I would love to do that. You know, Hair premiered on Broadway in the late 60s, but I think it is important to think a little bit about the context of what was happening throughout that decade up until that point. And the reason Hair was so revolutionary at the time and has continued to sort of have a place as a cult classic with a cult following is because it was like nothing people had ever seen, particularly a Broadway going audience. You know, you went to the theater to see, you know, other types. You went to see Singing in the Rain and sort of be entertained in a very predictable way, a way you expected. You did not expect to see the counterculture, the thing you were seeing on the evening news as being perhaps subversive and frightening on a Broadway stage. And to pay big money for it, too.
Right.
You didn't expect that, but it really spoke to the times. And I believe what Hair did was it brought the counterculture of the 60s, of the Vietnam War protest movement, to a mass audience. I think Hair really helped almost to be a bridge for that movement to a mass audience, because people, regardless of their political leanings, went to the show and loved it. Couldn't stop singing the music. Couldn't help themselves.
Yeah, it became a huge pop hit. And we'll talk more about that later this hour. But I thought what we could do here is let's set things up. A little set and setting. Okay, so we're going to start in, I believe, this is 1962.
Okay, a little bit before.
Just a
little.
Setting
the scene.
Yep, and we're set just to give you an idea of what's happening. So at this time, Leonard Bernstein is giving all these young people's concerts. Classical music is a very big deal for people, grown-ups, to go out for an evening. They'll go to a Broadway show or they'll go see some symphonic music. And in 1962, Leonard Bernstein decided to introduce a brand new American citizen to the American audiences and to President Kennedy.
That's wonderful. Like, I'm so excited to hear this.
This is Yo-Yo Ma when he's 7 years old. He's sitting down with his sister, who is playing the piano, and they are tuning. He is tiny. It's really odd to see Yo-Yo Ma's very tiny face, which we know so well. This is from a YouTube clip, and he is about to play right now. Here we go. Thank you. That is Yo-Yo Ma and his sister, and they're performing for President Kennedy in 1962, introduced by Leonard Bernstein as brand new hopeful American citizens. So they're playing for the president and Jackie Kennedy, who are applauding and looking happily on. And that, again, is to give you an idea. We're starting there in 1962, and everything started changing very rapidly about a year after that.
That's right. With the assassination of President Kennedy, of course, the tone, the tenor of the country changed very quickly. And many think of his assassination as the beginning of a time of great upheaval and change. And President Kennedy represented for many, so many dreams and such a shiny future for America, where everything was bright and going to be prosperous. And we're just going to continue getting better. And it was a real blow to the innocence of the country to have a president assassinated and one who was so aspirational.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we're going to kind of, we started out our psyche in that mindset of 1962. We're listening to lovely little Yo-Yo Ma playing his cello. And now, of course, Kennedy has been assassinated. So we are going to, again, kind of get you into that mindset. We're going to hear the funeral march performed by the London Festival Orchestra. This is the funeral march that was played at Kennedy's funeral. I'm here with Aaron Anderson Whiting. We are talking about Hair and the 1960s this morning.
Thank you.
I know it's sad to listen to, but that is Chopin's Funeral March, and it was performed at the funeral of John F. Kennedy. That was just performed by the London Festival Orchestra. They have an album of commemorative music from his funeral. And I'm Kate Botello here with Aaron Anderson Whiting of the Parallel 45 Company. We are talking about Hair, the musical, and about the 60s, and we're setting the stage for you as to what it was that helped create the counterculture that Hair is about. Why did exactly. we even need a counterculture? You know, right. So we looked at the beginning of our culture, everything pretty bright and shiny with Yo-Yo Ma and Kennedy. But now Kennedy is gone, and that had a massive effect on the American psyche.
That's right. And regardless of whether you were someone who agreed with Kennedy's politics or policies, the assassination of a president was so shocking and introduced an element of chaos and uncertainty not commonly felt in the United States in the modern era. And it shook people to the core that, what do you mean? That happens in other countries. That happens in dictatorships. That kind of instability. That doesn't happen here. And it pulled the rug out from under people's feeling of safety and that they knew what was going to happen, that they could count on a certain reality. That was shaken.
Chaos.
Chaos.
Basically chaos. And big chaos. Again, we had a very set way of the way we believed that things worked. And suddenly they were not working that way at all. And one thing that people did for the first time to address this chaos and help understand it was flock to their televisions to see right. it all. And this was really when 24-hour news coverage started to become a thing. It really wasn't until Kennedy died.
That's right. People got their news from the radio. They got it from newspapers. Previous wars and conflicts were taken in bite-sized, more easily digestible bits. And suddenly you could sit at your dinner table with your family and watch horrific footage of what was happening in Vietnam. And it was on all the time, and you were seeing actual people. You were seeing soldiers, you were seeing villagers, you were seeing both sides represented, and people were shocked. They were also riveted. They were watching, but it was a different way of consuming what was going on in the world and different access. It wasn't curated into tidy little news packages. It was actual footage.
So now if you think, now that you have this new chaos kind of abounding everywhere, well, out of chaos and societal chaos always comes art, because the art world has to respond to what people are seeing and feeling, and they're out there kind of picking up on the pulse. And Aaron and I were talking about how after this happened, that's when things started to get a little weird. I mean, I think that's kind of the best way to think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of what was typical and common sort of started to come apart and break down and be questioned. And, well, why is it this way? Does it have to be this way? Nothing else in our world is stable and static. So let's kind of pull this stuff apart and see what happens.
So you started getting composers like Philip Glass, mm-hmm. you know, making a big...
Changing the rules.
That is big. Changing the rules of what's music, you know, is that music? I don't know. Well, yes. Yes, it is. Or how is it structured?
How we define things, what we call, you know, art, what we call music, what is acceptable. All of those things were being questioned and challenged.
What's a concert-going experience? Is it going to go and see Yo-Yo Ma and his sister play the cello and the... Or is it to go and sit for 4 minutes and 33 seconds? And
right.
listen to John Cage create the ambience of the room. So this is kind of what happened. It becomes kind of Dada. You know, everything kind of gets broken apart.
Yeah.
And then people say, where now can I make
it? What
the
of
art?
Those pieces do we want to keep? How do we want to play with them? And do we want to take those pieces and reassemble them into a new reality, the way we would like things to be?
So to kind of turn conventions on their ear, we also had Wendy Carlos. And the Moog synthesizer, a synthesizer. Now, that is a completely, you know, wackadoo notion to any kind of classical music fan from the time. And so she kind of broke people in easily.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
Bach.
Right. We're going to do this, but with Bach. So there's something here you can attach to that's familiar. But then we're going to totally play with it to the point where you're thinking, what am I hearing? You don't even know. It's pretty exciting.
Conventional, but unconventional. Here is Wendy Carlos from Switched on Bach. ¶¶
Thank you.
That was Wendy Carlos performing J.S. Bach's Orchestral Suite No. 3 in D major. I'm Kate Botello here with Aaron Anderson Whiting of the Parallel 45 Theater Company. Hair is opening this weekend, and so we are looking at the 60s in a grand musical sense of
the
how...
large context of
exactly
how music was responding to and also leading all the crazy things going on, this tumultuous time in this country.
And again, to kind of recap, we started off with Everything Rosy, with Yo-Yo Ma playing his cello at age 7 for the president, with Leonard Bernstein there. And then afterward, of course, Kennedy being shot. We heard the funeral march that was performed, the Chopin funeral march at his funeral. And then again, we said things started to get weird because it turned everybody's notion upside down. And then we just heard Wendy Carlos performing the Switched on Bach. That came out in 1968, and it was at the top of the Billboard classical charts for the next 4 years. So
wow.
People were ready to have things turned on their head, mm-hmm. and that gave us a great place setting. Here we are now at Hair.
Here we are at Hair. So as we talked a little bit earlier, you have a pretty predictable Broadway experience up until that point. People went to the theater. They knew what they were going to see to one degree or another. There wasn't a lot of variation in terms of the form and content. You have some plot differences, but you're not going to be shocked by anything happening. And suddenly there is a Broadway mainstream show about the counterculture with hippies, real live hippies on stage, not just sort of in the fringes in the parks protesting, but on stage, people are paying big bucks to go see hippies, essentially in a protest play, protesting not only cultural norms of society, but protesting the Vietnam War, promoting sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And this is happening on a Broadway stage, bringing those ideas to the mainstream. And there is flagrant drug use on stage. There's nudity. There's very open discussion about sex. This shocked people, but didn't shock them enough that they didn't go. It was incredibly popular.
It's true. But when you think about, too, what it was that year for the Tonys, for the Best Musical Tony, the one that won, okay, our nominees, Hair, and then Promises, Promises, which is Burt Bacharach, like Dionne Warwick sings the hits of that show later, and the one that won the Tony that year, 1776.
Talk about contrast.
So these shows are running at the same time.
Yeah, and I think it's just looking at that Broadway lineup of that year, it's almost a microcosm of what was happening in the country. You have like extreme contrasts and people's vision of what we should be, what is appropriate, the way things ought to be. And they are trying to coexist and make room for one another, and sometimes at odds and jostling and jockeying for position. And Broadway was no different than the rest of the country in that way.
So let's hear some music from Hair. Again, a reminder, Hair is opening this weekend, the Parallel 45 Theater Group, putting that on in their brand new theater space. And we'll talk about that after we hear this next piece of music. So what shall we start with from Hair? What would you like?
Let's start with the iconic song, The Age of Aquarius, as that's how the musical opens, and one of the best known songs from it.
Perfect. Here we go.
When the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, then peace will guide the planets and love will steer the stars.
This is the dawn
the opening of Hair, the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Again, Hair is opening this weekend, the Parallel 45 Theater Company putting it on. I'm Kate Botello here with Aaron Anderson Whiting. And there it is. It was the dawning of the age of Aquarius. And it was the beginning, of course. This really gets people rolling
once that
show goes.
Yeah. This song became a really popular Billboard hit. And the Fifth Dimension covered it. And it wasn't unusual for some show tunes to get a little bit of play in pop culture. But this one just exploded. And that's sort of one of the significant elements of it. And then this song also became a bit of an anthem for the countercultural movement. People referred to the Age of Aquarius to denote a new era of a new society that was going to, of course, solve all the problems that we had faced before. And it was going to be the dawning of this new equitable age for civil rights and freedoms, and we were going to cast off all the constraints from the 50s in the past. And so the idea of the Age of Aquarius became, it was more than the song. It was like, we've started something new and we're not going back.
Mm-hmm. And it makes me think, I was telling you earlier about the first time I saw this show put on. It was by a high school, but that high school was in Mendocino, California, and it was hippie high. And I don't think they will object to me saying that at all. The community school, which had about 60 members, it was a tiny little school, but it was all the students in the school were the children of parents who lived in the communes, who ran there from New York after the Vietnam War and all of
these are people living it. They're walking the walk. They're not just like buying some beads and doing it in a superficial way. They're like, this is their life.
This is their life. I mean, the lead was played by a boy named Rain Crow. Good job, Rain Crow, by the way. He was really great in the show. but at the end of the show, that last number, all of the parents just flooded the stage in tears, weeping openly, singing that last piece of music. And you look, standing next to their kids, they're all dressed the same. This was very real to them. And I think that's my point here, is to say that a lot of suburban folks might have bought this album and thought it was really nifty, but this was very important life.
They were living this life. They felt engaged in the struggle, and the stakes were high. If we don't get this right, there is a lot of tragedy, that could occur. And they really felt that they were fighting for their lives and for what they wanted this country to be.
Again, a reminder, Aaron Anderson Whiting and I here talking about Hair opening this weekend with the Parallel 45 Theater Company. And we'll get to some specific details about that after this next piece of music. What would you like to hear next from your
It's so hard to pick, to pick anything because they're every song in this is so good. But let's do Easy to Be Hard.
Yay.
Okay. This is a song that Sheila, a character in the show, sings after she's had a particularly difficult encounter with the man that she's in love with. And this was also a breakout hit in pop culture. Three Dog Night ended up covering it in 1969, and it became another really well-known piece from the show.
So from the original cast album, here's Lynn Kellogg singing Easy to Be Hard.
How can people be so heartless? How can people be so cruel? Easy to be hard, easy to be cold. Oh, how can people have no feelings? How can they ignore their friends? Easy to be proud.
have no feelings. How can they ignore their friends? Easy to be hard, easy to be cold, easy to be proud, easy to say no.
Oh, Lynn Kellogg, just breaking hearts. That's so wonderful the way she performs. Easy to be hard from Hair. And again, one of the big things in Hair, the musical, we're turning everything on its end, including how we treat each other on a very basic level. And in that number, it's interesting because she's also calling out saying, you are a hippie. You are supposed to believe in peace and love and all of these beautiful things. And yet, you're just being human right now.
You're being human. You're not living. Where are those ideals now when it comes to the day-to-day human interaction? Like, we can have theoretical ideals that we want to put onto politics or onto society at large. But if you're not living them in your day-to-day life with your interactions with actual humans, what good are they?
Right.
And are you just being a hypocrite that you want to make other people live by those rules? But you don't really have to.
Right, exactly. Now, we are pondering big questions, but it's also just a great show. Erin, talk to us about this opening of Hair and all the work in your new theater and what we have to look forward to in this particular production, because I know you'll put your own spin.
We are so excited. July 11th, which is this Thursday, we are opening our summer season. And we are so excited to be doing that in a brand new venue at the Civic Center Park in Traverse City. And the Civic Center Park has a really beautiful old amphitheater that up until now has been rarely used in the past few decades in the southwest corner of the park, kind of tucked in this little sort of bowl in the ground. And what we have done as with our partnership with Grand Traverse County Parks and Recreation is we have sort of brought in everything needed to turn what was just a stage into a state-of-the-art theater. So audiences can expect to, you're not sitting on the lawn, you're not looking from far away. We have actually built a 3/4 thrust stage. Everyone is sitting in a chair with a padded seat and comfortable and a back to it. And everyone is covered. The entire thing, audience and artists, are covered by a saddle span tent. So even rain, beating sun, everyone's covered from the elements. And there are beautiful sight lines. There are no interior poles in a tent like this. But we do have the ability to hang all the lights and all the sound you'd expect from a professional experience. So audiences can expect to feel very, very comfortable, to have a totally professional experience, but not be inside a dark theater on a beautiful summer night. To also be outdoors and enjoying everything we love about Northern Michigan.
That's perfect in keeping with the show, isn't it? With
yes,
the theme of
yes.
The show itself.
We want to be outside and commune with nature. We don't want to separate ourselves. And we believe that art doesn't need to be separate from being outside. And so we've tried to create something that's the best of both worlds.
We're going to hear another piece from Hair just now. And then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the cast for this show.
Oh, I'd love
to. They've got a really exciting cast. Again, Hair opening this weekend. That's why we're spending an hour in the 60s, Erin Anderson Whiting and I. Now we're going to move on to, this is my personal favorite from Hair. And this is not one of the huge drop dead numbers. It's not
right.
Something that's burned its way into the psyche for any reason, but this is just some fantastic songwriting and storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Mills.
Yeah, it's storytelling. It's a character who has met a boy, a young man, and fallen really head over heels in a very, very short period of time. Doesn't know this person really, but has decided that they're kind of the one and is waiting for them to come back, and doesn't have their address or phone number. So they're just hanging out where they last saw the person in this sort of really naive hope that they're just going to magically return and fall in love with them back. And in a way, I think this sort of naive hope is, again, a bit representative of some of the 60s and some of this culture we're talking about that, like, we're not quite sure how this is going to happen, but wouldn't it be nice if things worked out this way?
They're doing a wonderful job of creating teenagers here for you, and you will learn as much about the singer in this song as you do about the person that she's singing about.
Yeah.
Here is Shelley Plimpton performing Frank Mills.
I met a boy called Frank Mills on September 12th, right here in front of the Waverly. But unfortunately, I lost his address. He was last seen with his friend, a drummer he resembles George Harrison of the Beatles, but he wears his hair tied in a small bow at the back. I love him, but it embarrasses me to walk down the street with him. He lives in Brooklyn somewhere.
Aaron
so
and I
sweet.
Chuckling over that because we can see that boy with his ponytail and his jacket, and he's not coming back.
He's not coming back. The audience knows that he's not going to come back, but it's sort of a lovely moment for the audience to just sit back, relax, kind of just have a moment where you're just looking into the life of a teenager.
Yeah.
And it's really sweet and really innocent.
And it's also got that culture counterculture moment because she specifically says, I love him even though I would be embarrassed to walk down the street with him.
Yeah, like there's still a little bit of a feeling of what is socially acceptable and what isn't, and knowing that people are looking at you
and
thinking, oh, you're one of those hippies, and you're not maybe comfortable with that exactly, but you also love him. And isn't that what being a teenager is about, figuring out what you can live with in terms of what people think of you?
Yes, totally. And it's also a kind of a mainstream culture addresses the counterculture.
Yeah.
Like, we're very fascinated with it and we really like it, but it eludes us somehow. And
we're
quite
a little concerned
it.
That we get associated. We don't want to be associated with it all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Aaron, this show has a terrific and really interesting cast. You all kind of cast from all over the place when you put these shows together. And I know that you have your own special P45 spin for this production.
We do. We have a tremendous cast. So these performers are here from literally all over the country, and a few of them even from places farther away. We have one performer who is actually from Moscow.
All right.
But these artists are from New York and Chicago and Los Angeles, working professionals in the theater field. And we also have some apprentices in the company who are college students who have some Michigan ties and local ties, which is really, really fun. Madison Hertel, Luke Klein, they are some faces that some local audience members might recognize who've gone off to college to continue studying theater. And we're lucky enough to have them back with us this summer. So we are just so excited by this cast and the talent they bring and the passion. And Hair is not the only show they're doing. This season, we have three shows that we're running in rotating repertory. So while all the actors are in Hair, they then split and each of them does one of the other plays. So while they're doing Hair, they're also working on an entirely different show, which is amazing. They're working on a jazz musical for families called Little Bunny Foo Foo, which will open July 18th. Or they're working on Aaron Posner's Stupid Effing Bird, which is a modern adaptation of Chekhov's The Seagull, which opens on July 25th.
Ah, well, there you go. Cool things happening from the Parallel 45 Theater Company. Thank you, Aaron, for coming in today.
Thank you for having me. We hope people will grab their tickets soon because we are almost completely sold out for the opening weekend, Thursday through Saturday. I think we have some Sunday matinee tickets left for this coming week. And then we have three more weeks. So parallel45.org to get tickets, or you can go directly to My North Tickets, either way, and get your seat and enjoy a beautiful night in the park.
Okay, well, thank you, Aaron Anderson Whiting, and Toy 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 to Parallel 45 on the
thank
opening
you,
of
Kate.
Hair this weekend. We will end with a giant, big, fun anthem from this show. This is WIAA Interlochen, WIAB Mackinac City, 94.7 FM in Traverse City. From Hair, here is the title track. Thanks again to Parallel 45, Break Legs.
Thank you so much for having us.
She asks me why I'm just a hairy guy. I'm hairy noon and night, hair that's a fright. I'm hairy high and low, don't ask me why, don't know. It's not for lack of bread, like the Grateful Dead. Darling, gimme head with hair, long beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, steaming, flaxen, waxen. Gimme down the fair hair, shoulder length or longer, here baby, there mama, everywhere daddy, daddy. A home to the fleas in my hair, a home for fleas, a hive for bees, a nest for birds, ain't no words for the beauty, the splendor, the wonder of my hair. Fuzzy, snaggy, shaggy, ratty, matty, oily, greasy, fleecy, shining, gleaming, steaming, flaxen, waxen, knotted, polka dotted, twisted, beaded, braided, powdered, flowered, and confetti, bangled, tangled, spangled, and spaghetti. Gaga at the go-go when they see me in my toga. My toga made of blonde, brilliantine, biblical hair. My hair like Jesus wore it. Hallelujah, I adore it. Hallelujah, Mary loves her son. Why?